This morning, as Amy mentioned, we gather for the first service of the new year. And what I'm about to say next, I didn't realize was the whole reason why I was offered to be here today. And I didn't get that until after I'd done all the this and the that that put this service together. And about 2 o'clock Saturday morning when I was finishing it, it came to me like, oh, well, this is why I'm here. And the reason is that I would like to offer my best wishes and hope, a blessing to each of you for this coming year from my heart. I'm also going to talk a little bit about how a homily comes about, because I'm frequently asking people, and people are like, or yes. And if you're a little, it's not a hard thing. And it will take on, if you do something from your heart, it will take on a life of its own. And I'm going to kind of show you how that happened for me. As this homily started a couple months ago, with the word confluence, it just kind of flowed in. It wouldn't go away. And it kept knocking on the door of my awareness over and over. And finally, I opened the door and I let it in. My first connection was with a friend of mine named Pat, who for years, when she didn't have enough money to do things with her kids, found a friend who had a cabin or a cottage in Confluence, Pennsylvania, and would let Pat take the kids there for a free vacation. So if you don't know where Confluence is, it's a small village of about 700 people in Somerset County, and it sits on the confluence of Castleman River and Laurel Hill Creek into the Youghiogheny, where Ohio Pile is. It's near Falling Waters. It's near Mount Davis, the highest peak in Pennsylvania. And when I found it, of course, I found the touristy things, you know, which listed all of the things that happen in this tiny little village. And a tiny little village in an area rich with resources where mountains touch rivers and rivers meet, flowing together. And I thought, okay, I think I'm on the right track. And then a little while later, one morning, I was at French Creek Coffee and Tea getting a cup of coffee, and I realized my regular choice of coffee at French Creek Coffee and Tea is named Confluence. Thank you, Peggy. Yes. Well, I was done then. It's like, okay, there's going to be something to say. I have no idea what it is, but I'm being led. So here I am. The word comes from the Latin confluentia. I'm going to do a little English teacher stuff here. I can't help myself. Which means flow, with flow, flowing together. Two or more things coming together, meeting at a point and becoming similar or something new or different. And the earliest definition back in the, maybe it was the 1500s, was physical and geographic, the confluence of waterways flowing together, creating a new or larger waterway, or just continuing. I mean, we have a confluence of French Creek in Franklin with the Allegheny, but it's still the Allegheny until you get to Pittsburgh, where the Allegheny joins the Monongahela and becomes the Ohio River. And then you can continue on to the Mississippi and go all the way to the Atlantic Ocean if you wanted a canoe from Meadville. It also, confluence is used in ecology, navigation, culture, ideas, philosophy, innovation, music, art, genres or styles, and psychologically regarding to the confluence of aspects of one's personality. So in its essence, to me, confluence is a flow out of which something new is created, and we'll go on with that in a bit. But at the same time, then I got this other word, convergence. Now I'm, you know, I've got I don't know where I'm going, and both words would neither leave me alone. Two words with similar meaning, I thought, until I found a piece entitled The Difference Between Confluence and Convergence. And essentially, they used a traffic metaphor that when traffic is flowing and merging, and if it continues to flow, that's confluence. But when it slows or stops and you get a traffic jam, that's convergence. So I knew that I needed to know the opposite of confluence because what I really of confluence so that I could really talk about it, because that was what led me. And the next question then was, of course, was, well, what does that have to do with us? Right here, right now, in this church. From my point of view, our church is a meeting place where we come together, and when we are here, we merge and flow with similar reasons to be here, and we come with common purposes. Through the years that I've been here, the question has been asked of the congregation to those who come through numerous processes, and the question is, why do you come here? And every time, the highest percentage answer is always community. Look at our order of service. In our mission and vision, we use community three times. We are a community. And come and unity, we come together to be together. So if that's our most common reason to be here, is to be in community, what is our common purpose? I believe that one of our most common purposes has several aspects. I always think that we come to be moved, to be uplifted, to be inspired, to draw in the positive energy we need to live our lives through our difficulties and traffic jams. And those things that hold us back or block our way, that challenge us, and yet hopefully help us to strengthen, mature, and grow. There are struggles in everyone's lives, so we come here, I believe, to face those blockages, those struggles in our individual lives, in our families' lives and relationships, and those we are confronted with every day in the larger community, in the world around us. And I also believe that many of us come for the common purpose to help others as well. We talk about that in our vision. And if we are energized or uplifted or inspired, we have more to offer to help others. And we do many things. Just to mention two, our Share the Plate, which is every week in our gift giving, and Soup on Saturday. And there are many more things that this church does. It is part of our mission to be a church that contributes to the spiritual health of the community of Meadville. We're not here to just sit here and be together. We're here to be energized, to be in the world. One of the phrases I love is, be a light in the world. Be a light. I think in the not too distant past, to continue with this traffic analogy, Lenny Nichols, I can just say Lenny's name and people smile. I love it. Lenny Nichols, he lights us up. He is a light. He spoke to us about some of his rules of the road in his life, his rules of the road. So I'd like to offer you several rules of the road, ways to travel through our roads of life to support our daily life in our joys and sorrows. And I'd like to do that by sharing some poetry, which I started with Come, Come, of Jalal Rumi, who was a 14th century Sufi scholar and poet who also founded the Mevlevi Order of Whirling Meditation, Whirling Dervishes. And it's a practice that combines movement and meditation, bringing together body and spirit. I hope that happens here. But to begin with that, what's really important is that what informs and improves our lives are not just rules or concepts or ideas, but practices we live into, weaving them into the fabric of our dailiness over and over, sometimes fully, sometimes not at all, but practiced with intentions and purpose over and over, where we come into the full experience of being who we are, not something we think about or something we observe from a distance. And Rumi said this well in a poem he named, "Put this design into your carpet." So we're fortunate enough to have some woven oriental, whatever, rugs in our house. And there are patterns. There are many, many patterns, multiple patterns in these beautiful rugs that one little thread at a time are woven to make this larger rug, this pattern. So when Rumi talks about that, I see that as that metaphor of our lives, where the poet says, "No metaphor can see this, but I can't stop pointing. Every moment says, put this design in your carpet." And he concludes the poem, "When the ocean surges, don't let me just hear it. Let it splash up into my chest." And now I'm out of order, so just bear with me for a moment. Oh, it's gone. Okay, I'm not going to worry about it. So I have four short poems. Each of them, I think, offers us a way to be in our lives when we are, I think we come here to be our best selves, or to find our best selves, or remind ourselves maybe sometimes that others have a best self as well. And then how do we do that over and over again in our life? So I'm going to start with where we started this morning again, because the invitation in this poem is one that is really meaningful to me. And I'll tell you why in a minute. "Wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, it doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan of despair. Come. Even if you have broken your vows 1,000 times, come. Yet again, come. Come." And when I looked up analyses for all of these and comments and so on, and the first one I found says, "Individuals from diverse backgrounds and spiritual beliefs are invited to join in a welcoming community." If that isn't us, I don't know what is. So, and it's in our hymnal, our little teal hymnal. It is our invitation. And the other line in that I love so much is, "Even if you have broken your vows 1,000 times." Nobody's asking you to be perfect. Nobody's asking you to do anything. Just show up as you are. Your successes, your failures, your celebrations, your struggles, just who and as you are. The second Rumi poem, I've taken the first few lines of it. "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field." It's another invitation. "I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about." And what speaks to me when I read this poem, and I've read it for years, is get beyond right doing and wrong doing. Again, no judgment, no blame, but meet. Meet yourself. Meet someone else. Be in that place of openness together. And the world in that moment is too much to talk about. We just are. This next one is a whole poem, The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He or she may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the doorway laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Rick's, I'm not sure whether he's smiling or laughing, but thank you. Once again, welcome whatever comes. And I think that's one of the hardest things in life. We all have longings, and I think we all want to be happy, we all want to be comfortable. And frequently we are not. We struggle. We are in unfamiliar territory. We have dark thoughts and deep sorrows. And Rumi's invitation to us is it's all part of the richness of being alive. And it is rich. And the only way to meet those things that are difficult, the only way to live with them in your life is to allow them. Because if we push them away or shove them down in, they will keep knocking. And they will knock louder and louder and louder. And so, allow them in. Treat them as guests. Honor them. Greet them with laughing. And this isn't in the poem, but it's the whole reason I'm here, and hopefully you're here this morning. We are not alone. We can reach out to one another. We can support one another. So when we open that door of our guest house and things come in, what's not in the poem, but is right here, is we have one another. And that's your way toward growth. That's your way toward being the best human you can be, is with everything in your life coming in as you open the doors and windows. And finally, let yourself be silently drawn by the strange pull of what you really love. It will not lead you astray. In the silence, there is sacred mystery, a path that shows the way not with words, but with the heart's yearning. Do what you love. Your inner calling. And Rumi assures us that it is trustworthy and aligned with your deepest, truest self. That our inner callings are our deeper selves calling us home, calling us to why we're here, to our purpose, to our love, and to what we can do in our lives. And, you know, there are lots and lots of days when we're just kind of here or we're just kind of wandering around. And for me, this whole, whatever this is I've done this morning, was that. Because I just kind of, I don't know, you know the old saying, follow your nose? Well, I guess that's what I followed, and sometimes my eyes. I got the two words, and then I had no idea what was next. Luckily, I gave myself months to figure it out. And the last thing I expected was that I would be reciting Rumi poetry. That was, I had no idea. And I don't even know where it came from. I just know, it, that draw to what you truly love. I ended up going from the living room over to the counter in the kitchen where the Rumi books are. And then, oh. So, you know, let yourself be led by love. And one of the comments said, in the strange pull of that which you really love. And it said, because sometimes people see you doing what you're doing, or you think to yourself and it feels a little strange. Well, that's true. I mean, I've spent a long, long time in my life longing for certain things that I love and apologizing for them because they're weird. And I finally, a couple years ago, dropped that bag and just, we love what we love. We are who we are. And the strangeness is not ours. If we're authentically who we are, if there is a strangeness, it's coming from someone else who hasn't opened the door yet to who and what we are. But we are fine. Oh, there's the page I looked for. So in all of this, in conclusion, years and years ago, I think I have time to do this, the worship committee was with Carmen Emerson. And Carmen was asking us to do some things where we got people to talk about their lives in the summer services. And I know, Corrine, you were there. You and I were there, and we're like, and what is it we tell people how to do this? So she very simply said, it's real easy. Find something that you're drawn to, something that interests you. Start with yourself, and then just follow it. Develop it, talk about it, expand it. And then finally, leave people with something that they can take home with them. So it's not just some story, but something, again, to help you move, to keep your traffic flowing, and for something for you to have when you reach those places of difficulty and struggle. So in conclusion and in summary, come and be in community, regardless of your missteps. Come and return again and again. And as a corollary, get up and try again and again and again. I was a middle school teacher, and the one poster that pretty much every teacher in the building had was the Michael Jordan poster. And Michael gave numbers about how many games he'd won and how many games he'd lost and how many foul shots he took or baskets he attempted and how many times he failed, and how, and all the failures were enormous compared to the successes. Food for thought. Let go of the judgment and blame of right doing and wrongdoing and move into the full acceptance of everything and everyone in your life. That's a challenge. Welcome and honor everyone in every experience, even when difficult and painful, and trust each experience as your guide to your highest and best, and always let your heart be your guide. And even when you don't understand its sense or logic, stand on the side of love. Be guided by your heart and stand on the side of love. May your life lessons be not words, concepts, and ideas. Rather, may your life flow and splash over and into you fully in the full sense experience of the meeting and merging of confluence. And in the confluence of this community, and in the meeting of meetings in your life, may you become more, perhaps even new and different, as you reach for your highest and best, and as I learned from Amelia Carr Labar, blessed be. Blessed be everything. May it be so, my brothers and sisters. May it be so, with love.